Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. My name is Tom Joyce, head of the Capital Markets Strategy Group here at MUFG. Hopefully you received our recent comprehensive publication called ESG's Acceleration, 20 Transformative Themes to Monitor in 2021. I am here today with two of my co-authors on that publication, Haley Orr from the Capital Markets Strategy Group and Amanda Kavanaugh, who is leading MUFG's ESG efforts in the Capital Markets Group for the Americas. Today is Wednesday, June 23rd, 2021, and it's great to have you both here, Haley and Amanda.
Great to be here.
So let's get started with what I think is one of the most important topics, one of the most important new developments around ESG, and that is disclosure requirements. Specifically, the U.S. House of Representatives just passed a bill that would require standardization of ESG disclosures for companies. Haley and Amanda, I'm going to ask you each to make a comment on this. What does it mean for our corporates, clients, and how can they prepare?
Sure. I'll kick off and talk a little bit more on the policy side. As you mentioned, this House bill that was passed on June 16th would require publicly traded companies to disclose financial risks related to climate change. It would also require reporting on political spending, on the tax jurisdictions where these companies operate, and also on executive pay raises. We don't expect this particular bill to pass in the Senate, but it is important and it is emblematic of a shift in Washington and what we've called President Biden's whole of government approach to ESG. In May, the president issued an executive order that requires Janet Yellen to engage with members of the Financial Stability Oversight Council and assess climate-related risks to the financial system. And importantly, you're also seeing the SEC prepare its own set of corporate disclosure requirements that could cover climate change, board diversity, workforce diversity. We do expect those guidelines to be released by October of this year. And importantly, the US is not alone in this. In Europe, you've already seen parts of the sustainable finance disclosure regulation put into effect. And there's already been a proposal adopted on the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive. And also in the UK, you've seen an announcement that there will be an economy-wide requirement for TCFD adoption by 2025. So you're seeing governments start to move towards these policies, but the key challenge remains around standardization. And we do expect the COP26 this fall to focus on opportunities for governments to show leadership on globally compatible standards. Amanda, do you want to talk a little bit more about the corporate side?
Yes, thank you, Haley. With the inevitable policy changes coming, the best thing that U.S. corporates can start doing is to get organized while we are awaiting further details. Since every company is different and some are more advanced than others, those that are at the forefront have already identified key people internally to focus on sustainability, brought people from various roles around the organization together, updated IT systems to track data, and started publishing information about ESG on their websites. Now, while that could sound a little overwhelming, the key takeaway is to just start having the conversation about ESG for your company and getting more information out into the public domain, as something is better than nothing and one can always expand on it in the future.
Let's pivot to the new issue market, which has really gotten hot in the course of 2021. We are well over last year's levels. Amanda, what can you tell us about issuance trends and investor preferences in the ESG new issue market?
2021 has certainly been off to a voracious start on the ESG front, with both issuer and investors benefiting. On the issuer side, corporates have heard the message loud and clear from investors that they would like to see more supply in terms of both product and diversity of issuers. One quick example is the increase in sustainability-linked bond issuances that, given the use of proceeds at general corporate purposes, has helped boost ESG issuance globally, especially from transitioning sectors, including the oil and gas space, as of late. Another example is that investors have also been vocal about wanting to see more social-labeled paper. While this can often be hard for issuers to find enough spend for, Yet the U.S. dollar high yield market priced its first social bond transaction last week, meeting that demand. As we look to the second half of the year, I definitely expect these trends to continue.
Amanda, let's continue the new issue discussion on the pricing front. With the tectonic shifts of capital that we've seen toward ESG-dedicated funds, what type of pricing advantages can corporates expect when issuing an ESG bond vis-a-vis a vanilla bond in today's market?
In the US dollar bond market, we have started to see meaningful basis point savings, which can be most easily identified in the investment grade market with corporates that have pre-existing liquid curves. While there are a number of factors that can impact this outcome, for instance, whether a company did marketing, how crowded the day was, how frequent the issuer is, et cetera, the savings for a number of issuers has been in the context of plus or minus 5 basis points. That being said, there are certainly other benefits too, like having a larger order book, attracting new investors, or outperforming on the break and in secondary versus vanilla bonds, which, as noted, is all driven by the increased dedicated ESG funds.
Let's pivot over to the bank lending market. Haley, I'm coming your way with this question. Very proud to say that MUFG has joined dozens of our peers globally, our competitors globally, in a commitment to net zero emissions in its finance portfolio by 2050. This is fast becoming a universal commitment among banks. Haley, how are banks rethinking the way they lend? And does this create risk of stranded assets and other such developments in the market?
So MUFG will be the first Japanese bank to join the UN-led Net Zero Banking Alliance, which means not only has it committed to net zero in its financing portfolio, but it's also committed to utilizing the science-based targets to achieve carbon neutrality across scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions. And as you said, this is becoming a universal trend. MUFG is not alone in making these types of commitments. You're also seeing banks across the street make these commitments, set goals for sustainable financing, and make commitments of capital to direct investment in environmental and social programs. There is a regulatory impetus for these actions. The Network for Greening the Financial System, which is an international organization of central banks and regulators, is in the process of conducting a policy review that will develop and will result in climate risk management policies for the financial sector. So from a corporate perspective, it's important to understand that if you're a company without a plan to address and disclose on climate impacts, your lending relationships with banks will be impacted. But these pledges are not meant to cut off funding to large and vital segments of the economy overnight. Instead, I think these goals and announcements can be viewed as an opportunity for corporates and banks to engage with one another to address ESG plans and ensure a smooth transition going forward.
So one other area that's really been an accelerating new development on ESG is the way in which investors are using the proxy season to impact corporate behavior. And this is certainly one of the critical new themes in the market this year. We've seen a record number of ESG-related resolutions in the 2021 proxy season. In particular, there has been quite a bit of press over the last few weeks about activist investor Engine Number One's role in unseating 3 of Exxon's board members. Haley, back to you again. How can corporate boards and executives prepare for a more activist shareholder base?
So the 2021 proxy season has seen more than 435 shareholder resolutions related to ESG. Top of mind for investors are climate change and human capital management. You're seeing demands for increased transparency, targets, reporting metrics, and business impact assessments related to these topics. But to be clear, it's not just an issue of climate strategy for the energy or for the industrial sectors. This is a broad-based theme across sectors, and these 435 proxy that I mentioned impact every segment and every sector. And we do expect this trend to continue and to accelerate in the post-COVID world. There's several factors at play here. First of all, the pandemic has brought global attention to issues of workforce welfare and equality, and investors are expecting corporates to respond accordingly. Secondly, you're seeing the face of individual investors and asset owners change. Investors are increasingly reporting that they care about ESG issues and that they're making investment decisions based on ESG factors. On the institutional side, some of the largest allocators of capital globally have publicly made statements pledging to be more active in their voting support of ESG proposals. So for corporates to get ahead of these shareholder proposals, topics like climate impact, like disclosure, topics like human capital management need to be addressed and discussed at the board level. When data on these topics is disclosed, it needs to be easily accessible and easily usable. Corporates should start to think about non-financial disclosures in the same way that they think about their financial data. So using the same focus on rigor and accuracy. This takes time. These are not overnight solutions. Systems need to be designed and put in place to collect and verify data. But as Amanda said at the beginning of this, some disclosure is better than no disclosure. It's important for companies to start building and implementing these strategies and implementing them across the entire business landscape.
Excellent. Well, Haley and Amanda, thank you both for joining me today. It's been great having you here, and I'm already looking forward to our next podcast together.
Yes, thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you to our audience for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team. Thank you.